This week on Potlatch, Charles Kai Pomeroy, American Indian artist and teacher from Metlakatla. Charles Kai Pomeroy, American Indian artist and teacher from Metlakatla, participated in the Festival of Native Arts on the Fairbanks campus in mid-March. I asked the artist how he started.
When I was small years, I watched my grandfolks, my grandfather, carve and do little things. It was until about a few years after I got out of the service that I really started taking up carving. Because we didn't have much art around where we were at. But anything that we had that was works of art, like the canoes and stuff, well, they always ended up as flower pots, you know. And I like to instruct kids and see if I can bring them up to be productive, make a living without... in the villages without industrial or, you know what I mean, when you got fishing during the summer, you've got not much during the winter, and there's not much to do around a lot of the villages. Everything's kind of based around the adults. They're always going to build the community centers and stuff like this, but if you take a look at it, it always hinges around the adults. And there's never not much done for the kids in the villages, so they can, you know, teach them to be self-supporting or be have something to fall back on doing, or pushing a career of art maybe with it, like a rehabilitation course. Fishing's, you know, like a hit and miss all the time. If they have the knowledge to make their knives and do their formats and stuff like this, well, they can sit in the evenings and carve and journey, sell their work. I'm part Haida and French Canadian, and there's one thing that traditional is fine to study design and know it and understand it, but if you want to develop a class of craftsmen instead of artists, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have craftsmen. You're going to have a repetition of the same old thing day in and day out with no input or motivation from the artist to do anything else. If you make a craftsman, and I don't like to train craftsmen, I want to train artists. And my definition for me on that is an artist is an inventor. He invents. He's made the world what it is today. And if he's a craftsman, well, he just does his work real nice and fine, and people expect him to make that totem pole that way, or they kind of got us in a stereotype situation. You know, if you're a Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, you've got to carve the totem pole and the mask and a bentwood box, all in tradition design. And I'm a firm believer of learning the design, but the kids, they work strictly on traditional design. I like to go more contemporary, using that design so it's more of me than my great-grandfather's work or ancestral type work.
Do you consider your work still in a growing tradition, or is it a break from tradition?
I'm not trying to break from tradition. I want tradition there, but I want it to grow into a new design incorporated in even soapstone or metal or marble. People, I think, have forgotten that the Tlingits and Haidas and Tsimshian did stonework at one time. There's proof of it. They were sculptures too, you know, in stone, agarite, and stuff like this. And We don't have none of that going on right now where it can be available. We don't even have a cultural center. We have these cultural centers on campuses, but what are they? They're nothing. There's no place for the artists to get together and really share each other's skills, adapt. Because from Eskimo to Aleut to Tsimshian or Tlingit, you'll find where they borrowed from each other's designs. And a lot of time the artist was probably paid to do a commission for another tribe or another clan. And often is a fact that the art has become so intermixed that people have picked up a mask, say, from Kassan. Well, that man might have picked up that mask from Heidelberg or Klukwan or something like this, and so they call it a Tlingit mask when it was a Tsimshian mask, and vice versa. Most of their books, I think, are full of BS on how they categorize a lot of work, and we have no way of seeing our work. All the masks, any good artwork is in New York or England or, so it's pretty hard to show students that want to stay traditionally, do traditional work, copy traditional work, and study it. Where can we go to study our own work?
Photographs wouldn't just do it, I take it.
Well, no, the biggest downfall of photographs is fine. If you've got an art lab that's set up where you can have these things, most instructors like me, well, we don't have nothing. We don't do we just get a few files, and it's kind of a hit and miss deal with the state. They run the program for maybe 6 or 7 months, like your CETA program or Indian education. If somebody goofs up along that line, we have a situation of that. Maybe the grant doesn't get written in time and sent in time because the other guy, maybe he's not going to teach next year. So that leaves the program falls flat. So you've got kids coming along. You're trying to run. It takes just as much work for us to run a program as it does an educated teacher. We still have to use philosophy in there towards the kids, and we have to understand the cultural traits that they might have at home, and it's very hard because the journey got us in a little area that's cast off, and no windows, no water, and generally no bathroom. It's ridiculous here in this state, the way the education is run on these programs.
Let's talk a little bit about what you do and where you do it and where your funding comes from.
Well, this year my funding came out of CETA, which is, they don't pay very much. It's very low pay. I'm a certified welder, and I work down at the sawmill, or I can work in a cannery when it calls for it. And the mill closed down, and there was a job offer for an arts and crafts teacher at the school. And
in which area now?
The Northwest Coast Indian Art.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which?
Metlakatla, Alaska, and at Southeastern, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you live now?
Right, yes. That's.
And you do teach in the school area?
Yes, I teach the I try to have a fifth and sixth grade introduction to Northwest Coast Art, which is just about 2 hours a week. The kids come in from the lower elementary, see? And, they learn how to do an ovoids and draw designs. And
what are ovoids?
Ovoids is your main outline for your work. It's what you base, everything is elbows, eyes, that design is traditional for doing a complex, box design or...
When you talk about traditional, you mean traditional for any artist or traditional for...
Traditional if he's going to...
Northwest Alaska.
Yes, traditional for the Northwest Coast student that's going to be interested in doing it right. Later he might want to expand on that. He might want to do it in a different shape or form. Then I give the introduction to the kids so that next year, the ones that really want to be in art or have really got an interest will come next year because they know what it's about. That kind of gives you a better class of students that you're not wasting your time next year kicking a lot of them out, or not kicking them out, but saying they're not interested in arts. There's no sense. The teachers always push off students on you. You'll have four or five good artists in your class, and the teachers will push off the kids that they can't handle. You know, the like art is not necessary. We don't even have an artist in residence, you know. We can't get funding where I could get $10,000 from the school, I could get $10,000 from the state. I think we need more artists in resident programs, you know.
Are there artists to fill all these positions?
I think so. I think it just takes somebody to get out and publicize this and coordinate it, and maybe in future years we could set up 10 or 15 cultural centers where the artists can study, where kids can come and spend a year carving, kind of like a small college or trade school, but it'd be a trade in the arts, something similar to the New Mexico. I believe it's Gallup, Mexico has an Indian Institute of Arts, and they study all designs. They don't just, you know, they learn a little bit about all the Indians, not just one or two.
Are you suggesting that each area with a grade school and high school be given an artist in residence, or?
Yes. What I'm saying is, like, I travel pretty extensive for environmental health as an Alaska Native environmental health artist, safety artist. And I had to do work, books. I would travel out to villages and live out there for a couple of weeks. I would do make slide safety posters, come back in with my material, live right out there. I didn't live in a hotel. I know too many people. They wouldn't let me any place I went because I went to a Native school. And I do things on snow machine safety, drinking maybe, even related snow machine accidents, freezing to death, and especially with the electricity and poisons. You know, it was all a rounded program, but it related right to the, it wasn't a $50,000 house that you see most of the safety stuff related to. It was a house in the bush like Fort Yukon or Unicleet, or, you know. And if we could get a program like that going, say, the 12th grade, and some villages are getting 12th grade now, pretty good. But they still send in a great variety of live-in students, you know, nephews, nieces come and live in the village and spend that 9 months there with relatives and go to school there, because from surrounding villages, if we could pick out these villages around, you know, Fort Yukon and Kuskokwim, and maybe along the coast, say, you know, Tuksuk Bay, or maybe even Nome. But I would prefer to have the culture center a little bit out of this environment, of the Avenue environment that's so damn distracting to everybody.
The Avenue environment? You mean large cities?
Yeah, like Second and Fourth Avenue environment. You know, well, that's the ruin of any student or a lot of people. Putting the artist, say, into like Unicleet, that'd be a central area for a cultural center, run by an artist in residence, and he would be there all the time. I mean, you know, and he would be making arrangements for students to go to graduate courses, like going down to New Gallup maybe and getting his PhD in art, or if he's that good, you know. That program has to be set up, and there's a lot of students that want it, but they don't get it.
We're talking to Chuck Pomeroy about the teaching of Native Alaskan arts in Alaska. Chuck Pomeroy, you have a plan that we've talked about, getting artists in residence in some of the smaller areas in Alaska. You mentioned the area like maybe Tuksuk Bay, Unalakleet, Fort Yukon, places like that. For students taking the art courses throughout the state of Alaska, learning their traditional arts, will there be a future for them making a living?
Yes.
Is there a future in Native arts in Alaska?
Yes, if we can bring up the quality, not the quantity.
Where will the sales come from?
The sales would be, a lot of the kids, as you know, come to college, they get a college degree, especially your interior people. They get that degree, but they miss home, so they go home, the degree doesn't do much. You can't use a BA of arts or PhD in, I don't think, in Tuksuk Bay or Shishmaref or possibly even Nome. But you can, if you've got the skill to use tools and make tools, even at your house, if when you do go home, you can start putting out quality work in the cultural center. The cultural center holds that piece of work, and when you have a considerable amount of quality work, then you send out brochures, or like the New York Museum even does this. So the museums advertise these in the art magazines, this show. This brings in a buyer that has the money, not the gift shop. And the artist makes, I think, more money this way than he would by trying to sell it to the gift shop and then having it set on the shelf and not selling, competing against the foreign junk that's on the market now.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that what happens now is that an artist, say, in Chalkeetsuk or Cake or Shishmaref makes his art, and it eventually winds up in a shelf in Anchorage or Fairbanks or maybe Nome.
Right.
Now, under your proposal, you would have buyers from large cities in the east and west coast of the lower 48 come to the villages themselves?
Right. To the cultural center, not just, you know, one cultural center would probably serve four or five different villages. Like if you put your, built a cultural center in, say, Nuwato, it could serve Caltag, Galena, and a few other up and down the river people. Maybe even trappers. A lot of Indian trappers that live way out of the villages, by themselves, do work in the evenings. And this work could be brought into this center instead of him having to take a rip-off at the gift shop level. In other words, putting together a place to display this work. Because, if a man's going to make a trip to buy artwork, he's going to be looking for artwork. He's going to spend the money to get it because he's already made that trip. But they come into the gift shop, and they know they're getting took because, if I sell a mask for $200 to the gift shop, I don't generally sell it. They want it on consignment. They don't stick their heads out too far. They want it on consignment. And they'll put it on the shop for 100%, or, if I sell it for 200, I want 200 out of it, they'll get 400 and more. They get good pieces of ivory work sent into a gift shop, good artwork especially, and they'll pay the artist peanuts for it at that present time, because they'll say, we have to take care of it, we have to pay for heat, we have to pay for this and that. And, he needs the money, there's things you do need out there. And then what happens is, when that boy leaves, they'll turn around and then, I know I got a buyer for this, I'll hang on to it. I know a guy that's, people are looking for good artwork. They want it. The instructor doesn't have to be a master artist or nothing. Instructor generally isn't. He's trying to help somebody make a living. What happens is they'll set this piece aside and they'll hold it. And they can rip off their buyers because they know what the people are looking for. A buyer will come in and say, do you have a crib board, ivory crib board, or do you have a mask, a certain mask? Do you know where you might get one? If you get one, let me know. You go in the gift shop, and they'll get these little hints to you. So you know you already got it. They already probably got a buyer lined up. Say, do you have any Bentwood boxes? You know, or do you have a mask that's such and such, Carowell, you know, or something like this, or a hawk mask? Okay. Well, they've already got that lined up. They'll pay you cash then, but they'll hold this stuff back. And they'll set this ivory and good stuff back and hold it for 2 or 3 years, and what they pay $100 for, they'll probably get $500, $600 a few years later. In other words, we're getting, it's a way of life. We're getting took right here on in, you know, in the city. When you come to the city, you got to have money. There's no way out. There's no, it's not like being out there in the bush where you've got your, most of your food, feed, and fuel you can live off. Which you would make out there in your artwork if you didn't have to sell it to the gift shops or peddle. You'd be better to peddle it on the street yourself. But that takes money too, so you'd be losing. In other words, it's got you coming and going. If you sell the gift shops, you get took. And on top of that, not only you get took, but the person, Jerry, that has bought it is getting took. And if you peddle it on the street, which I've had to, it costs you money to stay in town while you're doing your peddling your artwork. So you lose that way too.
The more artists you train, however, the more competition you create for individual artists, right?
There's always room for quality work. I'm saying let's have the natives put out quality work, masterpieces if they have to. Let's put out one masterpiece instead of 100 pieces of junk. I don't produce a masterpiece, I don't think. But I give them the grounds and the lead into eventually hoping that they will produce that masterpiece, taking the time that it takes to produce something instead of pushing out the junk stuff. But you almost have to do it. The people are $5 junk is what they're looking for. And the reason why they did that is that we've had so much Korean and Japanese and Oriental stuff on a shelf in competition to native art. Soapstone don't even hardly sell now, and it used to be a good item. No, they pour this stuff. They pour all these items, and you can't hardly tell the difference. Especially if you've never been trained in art. You go and buy a poured mask, poured platters, and stuff like this. So I have no alternative but to do the same thing right back. If I get the funding this summer, which don't seem very probable, I'm going to set up a kiln and I'm going to try to produce the answer to the Bering Sea Originals. You know, if you're familiar with her.
No, would you explain them?
Well, I don't know, this has been years in Anchorage since I've seen it. It might have had changed, but white artists with Eskimo names. They mass-produce these vases, plates, platters, you know, cups, and they get, the work is beautiful, but they get an awful high price for this stuff. You know, you do the cash on the side of a hill, and then it's fired. Well, I'm thinking an answer, maybe we could have a southeastern art. This is mostly Eskimo artwork they do. We need to come back with platters, maybe, with our traditional designs on them, wall plaques and stuff like this. But here we are getting into the relative junk marketing, but we got to have an answer back.
Chuck Pomeroy, we're talking about mass production of art here. Am I correct in assuming that you have the capability and your students have the capability of producing $5 and $10 items at let's say, in a short period of time where they can make a lot of money an hour. So you can make $10 or $15 an hour turning out pieces of artwork rapidly.
Well, let's not call it artwork when we...
Okay.
Okay. Let's just call it what it is, junk. They have the ability to produce masterpieces. Aaron Horn has that capability.
Aaron Horn is one of your students from Metlakatla.
Yeah. And there's quite a few there that can produce this work. But it's not often now that you can sell that masterpiece. If it is a piece of, you know, a master's work.
Can you make a living producing fine art? Or is the pressure for an individual artisan to produce what you call junk so strong that that's what he or she will go to?
I do it.
Do you feel you're compromising your integrity at all?
Oh, sure do. I'd rather produce one piece of work a year than 40 or 50 pieces of junk.
Now, whose responsibility is it to prevent your being forced to put out junk, as you call it?
Well, I'd say probably through grant writers, if we can get them. Fundings, maybe the university could help us in this area where just doing research and finding what kind of money is available to stake an artist, might say, or stake a cultural center. I think it's the government's job, though, to help themselves. This puts people in, they can produce and sell artwork in the springtime. This cuts down on your welfare. It gives cuts down on your crime rate in the village. Gives the kids something to do, and again, gives a lot of the older people something to do. Like a lot of our kids in our town, there's not nothing for them to do. You got a village of 1,400 people, approximately, in our town, and there's nothing for the children to do. Summer's coming up, fishing. What are they going to do? Walk the streets? And I think it's the same in every village. Summertime, sure, there's fishing and everything, but there's a certain element of age that they can fish. And I'm talking about kids that are 10, 11, 12 years old, 13, when they could be into a trade school, like, you know, an art school at, or art class at night. Down home there, I just open my doors to clean up the shop at night, and it won't be 5 minutes, and here comes the kids, you know. Can we work? They want in. But you can't get the money. I can't get the money to even get paid. I do it on my own. My whole class is free at night down there. And that's what I'm talking about. I think this would be nice for an artist in resident, where he does have the build, has a nice area to work in. He's there all the time. And he can teach, and he can make arrangements for the school to have full-time classes and work right in harmony with the school, with the teachers. And I don't mind working even with kids with problems. I've got kids that won't do nothing at school. You can't even tie them to a chair. But at home, they've made their knives, and at home they bring in the work they do. They're not class and orientated towards sitting down in 5 minutes. They're on the go. I can say names, but I don't think I should do that. But Aaron and them know kids like that. You can't catch them to get them in school, but they're good artists, and they need that. They need another 4 or 5 years of practice where they can sell their artwork, and that's where the cultural center will come in.
Charles Kai Pomeroy, American Indian artist and teacher from Metlakatla. I'm Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production. Reproduction.